The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
You're very welcome back to the programme. Just to remind you that we had an enjoyable launch of Highland Radio's Christmas car draw, and you can win a car for Christmas, simple as that. It's a brand new Toyota Yaris Cross worth over €30,000, and we had a wee run in it yesterday, and it's... beautiful wee car. And all you have to do to enter our draw is to enter our draw. You buy a ticket by simply logging on to our website, highlandradio.com, and click win a car. And you'll have just two options this time, buying one ticket for €15 or five for 50. So five for 50 represents obviously really good value there. You'll receive an email with your tickets attached. It's that simple. And you never know, it could be you to get a call on the 23rd of December to win that car. Now, you don't have to answer the call to win it. It's just we'll try and ring you. To say congratulations, but you don't have to take a call to win the car. You can also buy your tickets here at the radio station, highlandradio.com, or give us a call and we can help process that for you as well, 0749125000, or you can call in with cash. Everyone's different and how they want to do it, but anyway, we don't know what it is yet because there's a bit of secrecy, but there will always be, shall we say, little bonuses along the way. So stay tuned for that. But if you get in early, get your ticket early, you're in that automatically. So you can just sit back and wait to see if you are drawn out of the draw drum on December 23rd. So if you want to win this lovely car for, worth over €30,000, it's a Toyota Yaris Cross. Just go onto our website, highlandradio.com, and click win a car. Buy a ticket for 15 or 5 for 50, and you can individually name those tickets as well. Good luck. It's always popular. Right. Hi, Greg. Going to apologise in advance for this long email, but here goes. My daughter was transferred for an ultrasound on her arm by a GP. We were on the waiting list for 8 weeks. Today I got a call from Aphidia to say they have an appointment for her on Monday, which was great until they said I have to pay in advance. I went on to explain that she's 15 and she has a medical card under me. The receptionist said she has to pay because she does not hold her own medical card. If she was 16, she would have her own card and get it for free. I was confused, so I told him to call back later. I phoned the HSC to see if this was the case, and they said yes. Under the regulations of the waiting list being transferred to private, in the small print it says all procedures, ultrasounds and x-rays are free to anyone 16 and over with their own medical card. So therefore, anyone under 16 on their parents' medical card are not covered. So I ended up having to pay €180 because my child needs the ultrasound. Just want to highlight this and see if it's right or can I get reimbursed? Well, I suspect if the HSC have informed you that it's the case, it is the case. So it's right in terms of that's what they say and that's what they do. Is it right? Should that be the case? Clearly not. I mean, if your child's on your medical card, you would imagine that they would benefit from that. And if it was 1 year hence or 1 year on and she had her own medical card, it would be free. Instead, €180. Now, obviously, you're on a medical card because your income has been assessed. So finding €180, I'm sure, not terribly easy. We were at a dance recently for a country music gig. It was €20 on the door. Usually it's €15. In another venue, it's €20, but there are two big bands, so it's 4 hours plus of music. A support act was on for less than an hour before the main act. This was only 3.5 hours of music. This wasn't value for money. I spoke to the manager. They said, if you don't like it, don't come in. I spoke to the performer after the show. I asked for the explanation. They said, if you don't like it, don't come. Why can nobody regulate these concerts? The country music industry seems to be able to do whatever they want and charge what they want. If I bought a loaf of bread, I'd be able to complain. I mean, it's a toughie, right? But it's like an electrician or a plumber. You know, if an electrician has a very good reputation and they come quickly and get the job done and you're happy with the job, they can charge you, I don't know, €200. If there's another electrician that has not quite a good reputation or maybe isn't as quick, they might charge €130. It really is up to each individual, I suppose, to charge how much they charge to the venue, and then the venue have to reflect that in the price. It's not one size fit all, as far as I'm aware. There's no sort of standard fee. So there's always going to be a variance, I presume, and maybe some artists want less money. They don't need as much money. Or maybe there's one extra band member And that's another wage that has to be covered. There's so many variables. I'm surprised you were told not to come in if you don't like it. I'm not sure how that conversation went, but there is always going to be sort of discrepancies in that area. I'll take it to sort of 18-year-olds. If it was one of the nightclubs booking a DJ, you'll get one DJ that costs, you know, $5,000 to come and play a gig, and another DJ that might charge $2,500, or another DJ that might charge €150, and the door price will generally reflect that. Maybe there's something else going on and I missed it in your comment. I appreciate you sending it in nonetheless, but as I say, it doesn't surprise me. Now, you are very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And I'm very pleased to welcome into studio with me Professor William A. Thomas, Director of the Pope John Paul II Institute on Marian Studies. Thank you for your time and thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'll just ask you to move that microphone. There we go. That's it. Now, you have with you a very special item. Can you talk to us as to what it is?
Yes, it's a first-class relic of Pope St. John Paul II. It's very rare. It's very powerful. God uses relics to effect miracles. And there have been many miracles attributed to Pope St. John Paul II. Yes.
We have this first-class relic of Pope John Paul II, as you just heard from the professor, very, very rare. It'll be here at Highland Radio for the next 20 minutes. So I've been advised by Caroline, if you are passing and want to call in, you are feel free to do so. Can you give us the history of it, please, William?
Well, I have several first-class relics of Pope St. John Paul II. We have his blood. We have the hair from his last haircut. And basically, these relics are quite rare because, you know, he died in 2005 and he won't be exhumed until 2050 or 2055. There's a rule in the Fabrica in the Vatican that they don't exhume for 50 years. We have no doubt that his body is incorrupt. And so these relics then are the blood that was taken from him at the Policlinico Gemelli before he died. There were four vials of that blood, and also the last haircut. So in that sense, there's not an inexhaustible supply of these relics, as if you know.
Okay, and describe, for those watching, they'll be able to see, describe what is in front of us.
It's the hair of Pope St. John Paul II.
Okay. And where is that located? I don't know. Can you touch it? Is it disrespectful?
Yes, of course. Okay. And also, if you smell it, you'll know it's from the Pope.
And how does a person get a benefit from this? What is the procedure? Apologies. Yes.
God effects miracles through the saints. And one of the ways he does it is through the relics. And it's like touch, you know, like in the biblical account, we have the touching of the hem of Jesus by the woman who hemorrhaged for all her life, and she was cured. And likewise, when we touch the saints, we sometimes, Our Lady doesn't cure everybody, the saints don't cure everybody, but they do cure some. And those people who may be sick, who are in great need, yes, they will be healed.
And so do people pray and then touch the relic or pray over it or be in its vicinity?
I can say a prayer of invocation by placing the relic on their forehead. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to the Pope to intercede for them before the Blessed Trinity after that.
Now, this is all part of more than the important matter of the relic being in the region. Talk to me a bit more about that, Professor.
Well, I've come to Buncrana, or will be in Buncrana this coming Thursday evening at 7 p.m., where I'll talk about the urgency of the message of Fatima. We live in a world today, it's very commercialized, and for many, there's no room for God anymore. But in 1917, Our Lady appeared in Fatima on six occasions to the three children of Fatima. We know them as Jacinta Marto and Francisco Marto. Both of these now are saints of God, already canonized, and with Sister Lucy, who was a main seer, who died also in 2005. And the Our Lady intervenes to call humanity back to recognize the existence of God and the fact that we have, for the first time in the history of humanity, an analysis of where humanity actually stands before God. And Our Lady says on that at that time, God is already too much offended by man's sins. And therefore, there is a call to repentance. There's a call to reparation, to make up for those terrible sins. We all know the sins of abortion and the sins of euthanasia, the sins of murder, and so on and so forth. These call out to heaven for vengeance. And so it's important that we pay heed to this message of Our Lady in Fatima, which the Church has said is worthy of belief.
You're of the view, many are of the view, that in her appearances, she, you know, foreshadowed events and outlined really the path that humanity would need to take to avoid such events or future events for that matter.
Yes, indeed. When we pray, we change the course of history. And of course, the appeal, there are 20 appeals within the School of Mary of Fatima. And the first of those is a call to believe. And I think most Irish people deep down, especially those who are baptized and confirmed, have that notion of God. And they have a notion of where they stand themselves before God. I'm always inspired and impressed by the number of daily mass goers. And it's not so much as we hear the scripture every day. That's what we call informative. But we need to become more performative. We need to absorb the message that the Church is teaching, that Christ is teaching through his word, and put it into action. We need to adopt an apostolate, ideally of some charitable outlook. You know, one of the great Mother Teresa of Calcutta, who's a friend of mine, would say the one of the greatest tragedies, or the greatest, the loneliest country in the world was the United States, because people don't speak to each other. And, you know, the Irish, I was driving from Cork yesterday to get here, and I remember passing some remote place in near Ballygar, and there was a man in the field feeding sheep, and he waved to me. And I said, that's what Ireland is about. It's about community. It's about greeting. It's about, you know, love of your fellow man. And I love that about this country, you know.
So what the third secret of Fatima will be discussed. Why is that an important conversation?
Because a lot of people don't understand there is one secret in three parts. And like all authentic Marian shrines, and I have volume one of the work that I have done for the Church. I'm now on volume five, it contains all of the Marian shrines of the world that the Church has said these are authentic, worthy of belief. There is a prophetic dimension in these. And when we look at the prophetic dimension of Fatima, everything that Our Lady said came to pass. Everything from the greatest, one of the greatest miracles of modern times, the miracle of the sun on the 13th of October. It spun in the sky. It did all kinds of dance, as they call it. It came close to the earth. People thought it was the end of the world. And yet people were healed. People were dried out because they'd been there all night, 70 to 100,000 people standing in muck. And when this thing was over, 2 minutes later, everyone was bone dry. The incredulous came to believe what was incredible.
And there'll be conversation, of course, a Q&A, right? The showing of the documentary, Fatima, The Ultimate Mystery, the movie, that's also going to be shown on Thursday, the 21st of November. And just to let you know, it starts at 7 p.m. It's in the Plaza Community Hall, Buncrana Main Street. Tickets are €10. It's cash only, and tickets are bought at the event. They can't be bought in advance, per se. Talk to me about this documentary.
This documentary we brought together in Fatima for the centenary, the world experts on Fatima, and we interviewed them. And basically what they relay are the facts of Fatima, not so much the spirituality, which I will talk about before the documentary, but the facts, what happened. Why did it happen? When did it happen? What was the prophetic dimension? What was going on in the world at the time? The Bolshevik Revolution in October of 1917, Our Lady was appearing already in Fatima before that. And in, you know, and she warns about these errors of Russia, the usurping of the commandments of God. And so it's very important that we pay heed to the Fatima message and that we do make reparation. She does call, of course, for the five first Saturday devotions. She called for the consecration of Russia, which was made by Pope St. John Paul II on the 25th of March, 1984. But she also, in the same sentence, calls for the five first Saturday devotions. In each diocese, it hasn't happened yet. You get it sporadically in different parishes, but a lot of the clergy will not say the Saturday morning Mass, sadly. But I think it's my belief that when we do subscribe to the five first Saturday devotions, as she asked in Fatima, then the triumph of her Immaculate Heart will begin.
Why do you believe that that the priests aren't engaging in that?
Well, many priests, because they have the vigil Mass of Saturday evening, and they're preparing their homilies and whatever, they don't do the Saturday. Some priests do, yeah. Thanks be to God for that. I've never been short of being able to go on the five first Saturday devotions and what they entail, the communion of reparation, mm-hmm. confession, and so on. Wonderful. And we get great graces from those.
When you travel and sharing this message, are you always preaching to the converted, or do you notice, you know, people maybe, you know, with little or no faith coming on board? I was going to say converted. It's a hard. I can't think of the word to describe sure, it without sure. it sounding cultish or something, right? But that they are, you know, they become. You know, devotees to this way of thinking?
Well, you know, a lot of people, for example, it would be my wish that people who come to the talks on Thursday next in Buncrana, that they might be inspired to go to Fatima during the Jubilee year, which is fast approaching, and there see for themselves the events that are happening there. And yes, so I would say that every time you preach or teach some aspect of Marian devotion, Marian theology, whatever, then you will get people who take it seriously. This is where it becomes, what I said earlier, performative.
Mm-hmm. I get you. Now, I mean, there's two of us in a room here with a relic from Pope St. John Paul II. I mean, ordinarily, you know, if you were to travel with this relic, I presume it draws huge crowds. I mean, this is quite a, you know, a unique situation for me.
Yes. Well, it should do. People are fascinated by relics, more so the Irish, as we have seen with the relics of St. Bernadette. The difference with that particular devotion with Bernadette here is you didn't get to touch the relic itself. You touched the glass case. You didn't get blessed with the relic itself. Whereas with this one, you get to touch it and you get it on your forehead, so to speak, with the prayer of intercession. So it makes it's more personal mm-hmm. in that sense.
Yeah, and that contains actual hair of
Pope St. John Paul.
Pope St. John Paul yeah. II. And what is, in terms of his sainthood, what is the process from now for that to be fully established?
Well, normally the somebody who lives a holy life, the life is examined at their death. Their writings are examined. A decree of heroic virtue they must practice, or at least be proven to have practiced heroic virtue for a minimum of 10 years. When the theologians come together to examine the life and issue a decree of nihil obstat, which nothing, it goes then forward to the College of Cardinals, who will talk about it in a consistory, and they bring it to the Pope. So part of that process is a miracle is required for the beatification and a miracle is required for the canonization. And so in Pope St. John Paul's case, a nun was dying, Sister Simone Pierre of the Motherhood of God, the religious sisters from Paris, was suffering from Parkinson's disease. She got an inspiration 3 months only after the death of Pope John Paul that they should pray to him. And so she was in a wheelchair, she was bent over, she was close to death, and she asked one of the sisters for pen and paper, and she scribbled, "Priez pour moi à Pope Jean Paul II." Pray for me to Pope St. John Paul. And Mother General decided to do a novena. On the third morning of that novena, which was obviously very intense, the nun who was paralyzed with Parkinson's jumped out of bed and walked to the chapel to discover she was completely healed and she's still alive to tell the tale.
And presumably that occurrence, it comes in for very strong scrutiny.
Oh, absolutely. All the medical records of her are before and after. Yeah.
I mean, not only from the church, but obviously externally, you're going to get an awful lot of scrutiny for something like that.
Miracles have to be immediate and inexplicable to science. Then we know that person has great power of intercession before mm-hmm. God. In Pope St. John Paul's case, we had over 35,000 miracles. This was just one that was accepted. And the case of the canonization was Floribeth Diaz from Costa Rica. And she was cured immediately from an aneurysm in the brain and, of course, lives on to tell the tale.
Okay, so we're talking to Professor William A. Thomas. This is he's the director of Pope John Paul II Institute on Marian Studies. And what a piece of work you've undertaken in your compendiums. That's volume one.
That's volume one. Fifth, yes. Each compendium has 600 pages.
Yes, it's a significant piece of work. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you.
Okay, so there'll be all your questions answered on Fatima, and also a presentation from the professor and the showing of a documentary film called Fatima, The Ultimate Mystery, the movie. It's all on Thursday, the 21st of November at 7 p.m. Tickets are €10. It's cash only. Pay at the door. Is it clear as to why it was Fatima?
In what
terms
sense?
Of location? Why Our Lady appeared at Fatima?
Well, there is no real significance, only that they were three children. I think we have to understand
that. It was more the individuals than the location?
I believe so. Mm-hmm. I believe so. But we have to understand also that in 2015, there were three apparitions that Lucia reveals. We don't just have her own account of this. We have the critical documentation, which is the witness statements of everybody who lived in Fatima. We have five volumes of those. So not only do we have the memoirs of Sister Lucy, but she does say that in 2015 we had three, and then we had three of the angel in, 1915. 1916, we had the three of the angel, which were preparatory for Our Lady. And then in 1917, from May 13th to October 13th, we had the six. And in there, she makes the same appeal every day that she appears. Mm-hmm. Pray the rosary every day for peace. Peace, of course, internal peace, and pray for the world peace. And that's one thing that's failing today. The Irish were always known to be the nation of the rosary. I hope they haven't abandoned it. And if they have, I hope they pick it up again, especially for this forthcoming Jubilee year.
Yeah, I mean, it's still quite widely used, of course, wakes and at times of... obviously when things are the worst, that's when we tend to lean on our...
Yes, but it would be wonderful to have it in the family every day.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Okay, Professor, by the way, I'm not sure if I did mention or not, at the event on Thursday as well, there will be a blessing with the relic of Pope St. John Paul II, as we've been discussing. That relic will be in place there, and a blessing. There you are. Okay, Professor William A. Thomas, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
I do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much indeed. We'll be back with more shortly. Now, we were talking there, of course, to our last guest, Professor William A. Thomas, who has with him a first-class relic of St. John Paul II, which is part of his last haircut. It is here at Highland Radio for till about 11 o'clock. So if you are passing and want to call in and receive a blessing, feel free to do so. So that's here for the next 15 or 20 minutes. It's a first-class relic of Pope St. John Paul II, if that's something that might be important to you. Right, okay. Let's see. It is, you are tuned to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Coming up after 11 o'clock. Coming up after 11 o'clock, we will have John McAteer and Paddy Rooney for our second look at the run-in to the general election. So stay tuned for that. Anil Anthony joins me on the programme now. Good morning to you, Anil.
Hi, Greg. Morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Okay, you're concerned, and I suppose you would hope that all politicians are concerned, I suppose, in the mouth of a general election, about our health service, healthcare in general. And not just that, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Mainly, I want to highlight my personal experience with the challenges I face with the disability services here.
Okay, go ahead.
No. So I have a child with special needs, and in her case, she hasn't received any occupation therapy for over 1.5 years now. And if you take last decade, like 10 years time, she might have received 4 to 5 therapy sessions from HSC. So it is like it is equivalent to no support we are getting, you know. And if you check the stats, over 50% of children with disabilities are not getting any essential services.
Anil, can I ask what age your daughter is?
She's 12.
Right, okay. So it's important for her, presumably, physical and educational development that she is seen by these services.
Exactly, yeah. It's same with the speech and language as well.
Yeah.
So we are not getting any of those services. And I want to highlight also the school resource shortages here. So since I was not getting any services here in 2020, I decided to relocate to Dublin. That didn't work out. But at that time, I downloaded a list of schools around Dublin and nearby counties. I contacted 60 schools and applied around 20 to 30 schools and didn't secure a place. And last week, you know, I read in newspaper that someone, the similar situation, 15 schools he applied and he didn't get a seat for her, his child. Mm-hmm. So it is showing that 2024.
What does that mean come September, Anil, if you can't get a space in a special school? What happens with your daughter's education?
She has a school. I'm talking about the 2020 situation. She is studying with Little Angels now.
Thank you, pardon. I'm
telling, like, in 4 years' time, you know, 2020 to 2024.
Understood.
Nothing has changed, you know. Yeah, people are in the same situation.
I get you.
So
you also had, Anil, with your daughter, an experience at Letterkenny University Hospital. And really what we're leading to in that result of this is people's real-life experiences, the gaps that are there in terms of services, but the fact they're not really necessarily to the fore in party and individual manifestos. That's your argument. But before we get to that wider point, your experience with Letterkenny University Hospital as well.
Yeah, Annie, like she waited for around 14 hours, you know, to be moved to the ward, and that resulted in like heavy internal bleeding, and luckily, like she's okay now, but that should not be the case, you know. So we cannot blame the staff as well; they don't have resources. There is something seriously; some action should be taken to address these issues.
But just in relation to the experience in the ED at Letterkenny University Hospital, the long wait in your daughter's case, thankfully she's okay now, but she worsened whilst waiting for treatment to a critical state over that period of time, which is very concerning.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously also to you, in a contact with us, Anil, you talked about the housing crisis. We see now average rents in Donegal just short of €1,200, much greater than the cost of renting, sorry, much greater than the cost of actually purchasing through a mortgage the same property if one were lucky enough to qualify for a mortgage. But the housing crisis, again, it is a, this one is to front and centre, it seems, in most parties' opinions. What's your views on it all?
Yeah. The housing. Actually, I don't. I raised the concern as I was seeing these stats in the newspapers. But what I'm highlighting is my personal experience. You know,
yes.
these are the things I personally faced, and as a common man, I think I want to share this experience with the audience. You know, so the disability. Coming back to the disability, right? We are just talking about the stats of eligible children. But there are a huge waiting list, 10,000 children waiting for more than 12 months just to be assessed.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
true, yeah.
Just think of the gap there, you know. So there is, and none of the parties have mentioned any solution for this in their manifestos. You know, so there should be a clear plan on how they are going to implement it and the time period. How in a time box period, how they're going to resolve it. None of them have mentioned. There is some mention about the carer's allowance mean test, removing the carer's allowance mean test. Or another party has mentioned about hiring 800 therapists. Is it possible? It is, in practically, it is not possible, because if you see the around the world, there is a huge shortage of SLT and OT therapists.
Mm-hmm.
We should look for a more proactive approach. Digitalization, why we are not talking about digitalization? If you look for the other countries, Canada, they are going for virtual speech therapy. If you go to their website, you can see that no waiting list, immediate availability for assessment. So how they have managed to achieve that? UK, they have a lot of actions in place for virtualization. Direct Health Australia, that is a government initiative. New Zealand, National Telehealth service.
Mm.
Why we are not thinking about it? It's like it will help to triple the therapy availability here, and eliminating barriers. Right?
And Anil, I know the point you're making. It's a very valid point, of course. Looking at international best practice and what we can employ here, but there are also great variances within the country, within different areas of the HSE, particularly in certain areas such as, you know, home care and what have you. So, I mean, whatever about us having there being big gaps between the likes of us and Canada, Australia, New Zealand, etc., there seems also to be great gaps between services in the Northwest and the rest of the country. So, you know, there are big problems, but also localized variances, which are quite concerning.
Exactly. So I would say, like, the parties should think of a proactive approach. It should be treated as an emergency, like, situation, and come up with a time-bound action. Just stating, like, a number, like, this many number will be hired, that won't work, you know.
Okay.
So there are options, like, we can integrate these services with the school for the special needs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there are countries where the government fund the school to look for the occupation therapist or the therapy services themselves, because HSE, it is not available, we all know. So they can either locally look for the private available therapist or virtual or whatever the location they are, you know, based on that. That should be a short-term plan. We can implement in a 100-day time.
Okay.
So no action like that has been mentioned. You know, and long-term, of course, we can look into, like, integrating it with the HSE and hiring more people, getting more local jobs. So there is no clear plan, you know.
Okay.
So that is really concerning.
All right, Anil, listen, we'll put some of your concerns during our debates to the various candidates, 20 of them. I think the overwhelming majority are going to engage in it, and I'll make sure to see what their views are in this area and the commitments and the timeframes. That's what it's all about. Thanks, Anil. That's Anil Anthony there. Do you agree or disagree? I know many families in his situation will agree, because I've had many interviews. We've had many interviews on this show in relation to that. Excuse me. Louise on Facebook says, as it relates to our caller whose 15-year-old child was referred for a private scan but couldn't get it on her mother's medical card, effectively. She could have got it at 16 with her own medical card. Louise on Facebook says it's the same if you take your child to a dentist, not the school dentist. You have to pay if under 16. Roisin says, fine ones to talk about repatriation. This is on X. Maybe the church should lead by example with what happened in the mother and baby's homes. Mary Jo Boner says, our health system in Ireland is a disgrace. That's all I can say. And it has nothing to do with the floor staff and nurses. They are going over the bounds of duty with caring profession, really overstretched in their line of duty. It's very unfair. Thank you very much for that. Darren is responding to our conversation we had earlier on as it relates to inviting candidates to sign up to a protocol to, avoid discriminatory language, hateful language. Darren says, good morning, Greg. Will you remind your guest this is Ireland? He has no right to feel offended. Speech will always be offending to someone. It's always the people talking about racism who spread racism. I get where you're coming from, Darren, but at the end of the day as well, too, at the end of the day, you know, we can get our points across without hurting each other, can't we? Without saying things that are incredibly hurtful, which really is what we're talking about here. It doesn't mean you can't say stuff. You can have conversations. I think we talk about a lot of stuff on this show really quite respectfully, but get to the core points, the core issues that are the core concerns people have. But it doesn't have to be through the use of scaremongering, hateful language, things like that. But anyway, we try our best. Quick break, and then we're going to talk about the driving test situation with Frank. Please hold, Frank. Okay, so it's going to be cold and wet today. There is a yellow warning for snow and ice for Donegal. It's a moderate warning, okay, so we're not trying to scaremonger here. It's a moderate warning. Snowfall accumulation. Here we go. Snowfall accumulations possible this evening and overnight. Possible impacts include, of course, poor visibility, difficult travelling conditions. And it's valid until 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. Kicks in at 7 p.m. This evening. It's been extended to Cavan, Donegal, Monaghan and Leitrim. I don't think Monaghan was in the first advisory, but there you go. Frank Doherty is a driving instructor. Frank, I appreciate your patience, but I suppose as a driving instructor, patience is very important to you. Thanks for your time today, Frank.
Good morning. I suppose it has one of the virtues of it, all right.
frustrating for you, Frank, because, I mean, obviously, you know, you're putting a great deal of time and effort into your students and building them up to that really important day it is for many. And I think the younger you are, often the more sort of a milestone and importance it feels. What do you think the solution to this situation is? Just to recap, we've got four testers, three in Letterkenny, one in Donegal Town, and Boncrana is covered by those four as well. But we've had in excess of 30 cancellations now over the last week or so. What can we be doing?
Well, I mean, that statistics are shocking on that. My thinking on it would be, and maybe, I don't know, maybe it's not a good idea, but what about all the testers that has retired?
Yeah.
They're fully trained, they know their job inside out. Instead of waiting on to get new testers trained up, ask some of the retired ones to come back in and try and get the backlog pulled down as soon as possible.
So they've the skill set, the knowledge there. Maybe there needs to be just a quick assessment to see they sort of retain those skills, but get them back out there in the short term to try and clear the backlog.
Yeah, just till the backlog is gone, you know.
Do you know any, Frank, that might be inclined to, or is this just?
Yeah, I would know a few. Yeah, all right.
Right, I mean, that's the skill set. The skill set's there. Have any of your students been the victim of these cancellations, Frank?
Oh, of course, yes, yeah, surely. Yeah.
And what feedback do you get from them on it? Got it, obviously.
So, well, obviously they're very, very disappointed on it, you know, and they're put back and they're waiting again, and then it's just a waiting game again, you know. Then they're recalled, and then something else happens, and they're put back again.
Yeah.
It's really, the system really isn't working, you know.
No, and what happens is, and we don't often talk about it, those that are, you know, have completed their mandatory lessons now, they're at the back of a very long list. That list is actually even growing for them, because those with cancellations, they're going to try and accommodate them first. It keeps pushing, you know, the newly on the list further and further back, Frank.
Yes. There was a thing way back years ago, it used to be that whenever they were starting off. They had their license for 6 months. Then on their first license. Then on their second license, then they were allowed to drive.
Yeah.
The learner divers. It was legal for them to drive, but then they had to do their test, and then if they failed their test, they had to go back to having someone on with them. I thought that was a fairly good idea because it gives them a chance to get a bit of experience in that too, you know.
All right, let's see what the listeners think. Frank, thank you very much indeed for that. That's Frank Doherty, a driving instructor with some simple solutions, whether you agree or not, potential solutions to the ongoing lengthening lists. And I must say, by the way, we did mention that we had the first class relic of Pope St. John Paul II in Highland Radio. And since, there's been a steady stream of people coming up for a blessing, which is, I don't know what I expected. I didn't expect as many people as has called in, which is interesting.